So lots of brokenness in our world, and we've been seeing that just ramp up probably for a long time, but we're feeling it over these past couple months. And we just, if you're paying attention, the natural response is probably to say, what's going on? What is going on? Over the past few weeks, we've seen shootings in New York City, California, racially motivated massacre in Buffalo, New York. And now the unspeakable loss that we've seen in Texas. How do we make sense of this kind of madness, right? And we do try to make sense of it, don't we? I mean, each of us in our own way, we do our best to make sense of the broken things in the world around us. If you're conservative, we try to make sense of it from our conservative worldview. If we're liberal, we try to make sense of it from our liberal worldview. If we're agnostic, we try to make sense of it from our agnostic worldview. If we're atheist, we try to make sense of it from our atheist worldview. The list goes on and on. We're just trying to make sense of a world that doesn't make sense. Something that's senseless. It's hard to make sense of, right? And moments like this force us to do business with what we believe. And simple pat answers aren't going to do the trick, right? Probably those are going to hurt us. Everything will be all right. Will it? I'm not so sure. They're in a better place. Is that making us feel better? Most common words of comfort we hear today, sending our thoughts and prayers, and now that just gets lambasted, like, no, because it just falls on deaf ears at this point. And as we ask the question, what's going on? I think we often feel like maybe nobody has felt like this before, right? But we know that the brokenness that we see in our world today is a continuation of the same broken story that's played out from almost the beginning of human history, right? Human beings destroying the image of God in other human beings. Genesis 9, we've read this for the past several weeks. Whoever sheds human blood, by humans shall their blood be shed. For the image of God, in the image of God has God made mankind. So Cain killed Abel, and that refrain has continued throughout our existence. Pharaoh killed baby boys, genocide, the baby boys of Israel. Herod slaughtered the innocents of Bethlehem. Now, I can imagine that thousands of years ago, people like us today, we're asking the same questions that we ask today. What's going on? God, did you let this happen? I shared last week from Ecclesiastes chapter 1 that what has been will be again. And what has been done will be done again. There is nothing new under the sun. So the pain that we feel today has been felt before. The ideas that we have in our life have been conceived before. The tragedies that we feel in our lives have been felt before. The questions that we cry out to God have been cried out to God before. There's an existential angst about our very being that causes us to cry out, why am I here? Does my life matter? Why do horrible things happen? Those are not new questions. Our observations of the world are not new observations of the world. And so this morning I'm going to try to put a bow on this existential sermon series that we've been in for the past several weeks. And I'm going to do so by looking back at a man who was asking the same questions that we ask today when we look at the world and making some of the same observations that we make of the world today. The book of Ecclesiastes follows the wisdom of a man referred to as the teacher. We think this might be King Solomon, who was considered among the wisest people who ever lived and was the son of David. And it says right there in the very first book of Ecclesiastes that this was written by the son of David. Of course, David had many sons. It would make most sense that this would be Solomon. So that's what a lot of scholars believe, that Solomon wrote this. And what we find in the teacher is a person who is asking many of the same questions that we ask. Why is life hard? What's the meaning of life? Why are some people oppressed and other people's aren't? Why is there injustice? At a glance, it might seem like the most depressing book in the Bible. And it might be. It might be. And look at the way that the teacher starts. And this is a refrain that we see throughout the book of Ecclesiastes. Meaningless, meaningless, says the teacher. Utterly meaningless. Everything is meaningless. Wow. Bit of a downer, maybe, right? But can we at least, if we're going to like deal with like a hard book like this, can we at least appreciate that the Bible keeps it real? No pat answers in the Bible, okay? We are, all of us, desperately longing for meaning in our life. One of the things that we've said from the beginning of this sermon series is that your life does indeed matter. Right now, your life has meaning right now. Why? Because, one, you're not an accident. God made you. And moreover, he didn't just make you like the rest of creation. He made you in his image. Now, that's not because you have some special human ability or quality that makes you more special than other creatures. We've talked about this. Now, the image of God is a status. It's stamped on your entire being. It can't be removed. You have worth. You matter to God. So what do we do with this teacher who comes along and says, everything is meaningless? When your pastors have been saying the opposite for the past 5 weeks, right? Well, first of all, I think we need to dial in a bit and the meaning of the word meaningless, okay? The Hebrew word behind the word meaningless is the word hebel or hevel, okay? Now, our NIV Bibles that we have here in our chairs, it translates that word hebel as meaningless. Others translate it as vanity or futility, but I really want to break it down here. Literally, the Hebrew word hevel means a wisp of smoke or vapor. So what is hevel? I got this candle here, and I want to illustrate as best as I can. I'm going to get as close as I can. Don't tell the fire department. What's hevel? This is hevel. I can't grasp it. I could see it there, but I can't grasp it. That's what the word hevel means. And I think the image helps us more than anything else. Smoke and vapor can't be grasped. And that's the image that the teacher is trying to convey. The things of this world are here today and gone tomorrow. They're vapor, they're smoke, they're hevel. There's a brokenness and a randomness to life that feels like it just can't be captured. Like, things might feel like they're going along just great, and then a pandemic happens. Like, what? It just floats away. Right. Second, I think we need to name the fact that there's something rhetorical happening here, okay? The author of Ecclesiastes is using a rhetorical device to get us to think. Meaningless? Smoke? Hevel? Is that true? I'm curious. Go on. So we should read those first words of Ecclesiastes and say, interesting, I'm going to read on. And throughout the book of Ecclesiastes, the teacher goes on to point out the many things that we think give rich meaning to our lives, but which in the end are fleeting. Wealth, career, status, pleasure, all fleeting, all meaningless, he says. Then the teacher really pushes the boundaries and says that even wisdom is meaningless. What? How can that be? Isn't this one of the wisdom books in the Bible? If it is written by Solomon, wasn't Solomon like supposed to be one of the wisest and desire wisdom in such a beautiful way? He asked God for wisdom and God gave it to him. Is wisdom even meaningless? But while the teacher does value wisdom, even wisdom, he says, is in danger of the hevel, the meaninglessness, the difficulty to grasp of life. Listen to these words from Ecclesiastes chapter 9, verses 17 and 18. The quiet words of the wise are more to be heeded than the shouts of the ruler of fools. Okay, so that sounds good. That's great. And he says this, wisdom is better than the weapons of war, but one sinner destroys much good. In other words, wisdom is great, but it can be crushed in a moment by the foolishness of one fool. I want to read that verse 18 one more time, and I don't know about you, but that one feels like it hits me like it's like truth punching me in the gut this week. Wisdom is better than the weapons of war, but one sinner destroys much good. How true, how devastatingly true does that feel right now? In other words, yes, wisdom is good, but even the brokenness and the randomness of this life can destroy the good of wisdom. I think we've seen that in the past few weeks, have we not? In chapter 4 of Ecclesiastes, the teacher gives voice to the cry that I think many of us may be feeling. He says this, again, I looked and I saw all the oppression that was taking place under the sun. I saw the tears of the oppressed, and they had no comforter. Power was on the side of the oppressors, and they have no comforter. Friends, what other book do we have but the Bible that can be this real with us? There are no pat answers here. There is a teacher saying, I see what you see, a broken world, oppression, tears, injustice, power imbalance, all these things. Does your life matter? Does my life matter? Is there meaning in the midst of all of this brokenness? These are all rhetorical setups for a final dramatic but simple conclusion to the book of Ecclesiastes. Before the end, we get a final word, not from the teacher, but from the other voice in the book, the narrator, the author. Only speaks twice, at the very beginning and the very end. And the conclusion that the author writes after hearing all this meaningless, meaningless, meaningless from the teacher, the conclusion to this question, does our life matter? Does your life have meaning? Yes, it does. It 100% does. But that meaning becomes realized when we live into our created purpose. Look at what it says at the very end of the book of Ecclesiastes. When all has been heard, that is everything that the teacher has had to say, the conclusion of the matter is this. Fear God and keep his commands. Because this is for all humanity. Some translations say this is the duty of everyone to fear God and keep his commands. So what does this mean to fear God? It doesn't mean that you're afraid of God. We oftentimes make that mistake like, why am I supposed to be afraid of God? No, that's not what it means to fear God. To fear God, this is a statement about posture, the posture of our lives. Oswald Chambers put it this way. He said, the remarkable thing about God is that when you fear God, you fear nothing else. But when you do not fear God, you fear everything else. Some of you don't even know God yet, and you fear God. You're seeking truth with fear and trembling, and I love that. Some of you might believe all the right things that you're supposed to believe, right? But you don't fear God. What is the posture of your life, the posture of your heart towards God? Is it a heart that longs for your creator? Is it a heart that longs for the things that are true? Is it a heart that acknowledges your smallness and God's grandness? Your life in this world is not just a wisp of smoke. Your life is not meaningless. Your life is so much more. God put your life here on this planet to burn brightly and show the rest of the world, to image to the rest of the world who God is. That's a very difficult thing to do when we don't fear God. When we don't come before our Creator and long to be in His presence and say, God, my posture for you is one that says, you're true, you're good, I long to be in your presence. There's joy for me when I'm in your presence. And you are my God, and I am created. That's what it looks like to fear our God. Not being afraid, but understanding who our God is. Your life has the hot, God-radiating, God-imaging beauty that was placed there from before you were even born. There's only one Linda Bailey. She says, thank the Lord. Yeah, there's only one. There's my dad's here today. There's only one Tom Sharkey. God made you. He knit you together, formed you, and stamped you, gave you status, His image in your life. You're designed with a purpose. So in this broken world, filled with oppression, filled with injustice, filled with moments where we wonder why, and that leave us asking, as the psalmist in Psalm 13 says, how long, Lord, how long? Your life has meaning in the midst of all of that. Meaning that's activated when we bend the knees of our heart to the God who made us.